Seriously, watch that. Italians just love a good fight. Not Italians, Irish.
Italians.
What is wrong with you?
Berlusconi in the ring?
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Apparently, Sheamus is no longer the Celtic warrior. He is the Italian stallion, at least according to Jerry Lawler on Monday night. This is episode 317 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 9th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast. You can do so every weekend on thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes. I also want to mention here up front that this week's episode is brought to you by audible.com. You can download tons of audiobooks on audible.com right now. It's a great service. And you can help the show out if you go to audibletrial.com/solidmonster. They got a free 30-day trial period going. You can sign up free of charge. You get one free audiobook. Even if you cancel, you get to keep that audiobook. But I think a lot of you guys are going to like the service. I've heard from some of you who enjoy it. You've gotten a few audiobooks at this point, but you get one free one with your 30-day trial. And if you go to audibletrial.com/solidmonster, if you sign up at that link, that kicks back a little bit to this show and helps us out, so I would very much appreciate that. So check them out. It's a great service, and like I say, you got 30 days to try it out, free of charge, and you get a free audiobook out of it. There's wrestling books up there, but it doesn't have to be. It could be any book that you may be interested in. So audibletrial.com/solidmonster is the place to go for that. I also want to mention PayPal shout-outs. We had a lot of people who donated via PayPal this week, so I want to give a shout-out to Samuel Jobert, Matt Gafferta, Chris Payne, Sean Barba, Brandon Kelly, Ian Loomis, Sean Bullen. And, you know, I was thinking, this show is all about having fun, right? That's the whole point of this whole thing. We're supposed to have fun. So I thought, for the people who go out of their way to support the podcast, the guys who have donated multiple times, and I've mentioned their names here on the show probably multiple times, why not give them a wrestling nickname? So from now on, if you donate $10 or more to the Sound Off via PayPal, we don't have to say how much specifically, but $10 or more, since I don't want to have to come up with 50 nicknames if people decide, oh, I'll give a dollar and I'll get a name. Feel free to donate whatever you want, but let's say $10 or more, I'll be like Vince McMahon. I'll give you a gimmick. So Lee Feigenbaum, let's call you Fearless Feigenbaum. How about that? Thank you for the donation. And Adam Massaglia, I hereby dub you the Maniac. Maniac Massaglia. I like that. It has a nice ring to it. So thank you to you as well. So that'll be a fun thing to do from now on if you want to donate via PayPal, which you can do on thesolidmonster.com. That is the donation box. You'll see it on the right-hand side. Give what you can. Every little bit helps. But $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. We'll see if I do a better job than they used to do down at NXT. I have two new Sound Off extras that went up on YouTube this past week. I kind of mentioned them last week, but they're up now. My full review of the Jim Ross one-man show, which came to New York City last weekend. I went to one of the two shows that he did over at the Gramercy Theater. Really, really good stuff. I go into more detail than I did here on the podcast last week about what he talked about. And he got into a lot of different things during the Q&A session. So I get into that. It's a full half-hour plus review of that. That's up on our YouTube channel. And also, a special interview that I did with Matthew, the Botchamania guy. As a matter of fact, I think he has a new Botchamania out this weekend. Everybody knows what Botchamania is. It's fun. Again, wrestling is supposed to be fun. That's the whole point of the videos. He actually has a lot of wrestlers who have submitted bumpers for him to use in his videos and who write into him saying they love Botchamania. So I talked to him also over half an hour. We had a conversation last week about the videos, how he puts them together, what goes into the making of it, some other wrestling-related questions as well, WWE, TNA, that sort of thing. So that full interview is up on our YouTube channel as a Sound Off Extra. You can subscribe to the channel there. You never know when a new video may go up. I do post those extras every now and then, so please do go on YouTube, check those out, leave some comments, and let me know what you think. Raw this past Monday night was live from Chicago, Illinois, at the Allstate Arena. The big question on everyone's mind, would CM Punk show up? Is he back? Is he not going to be there? And then they had this whole hijack Raw movement. Hijack fail is more like it. And that's not a knock on the Chicago crowd. I expected the Chicago crowd to be awesome and to be loud and to be boisterous for weeks before Raw even came to Chicago, because Chicago generally is one of the louder, better crowds that WWE has. I didn't expect that the hijack movement would do anything to change that. If anything, maybe they would be even more rabid. And they were. They were during certain segments. But the whole purpose of this hijack movement, we're going to chant CM Punk all night, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and they had a whole script. They had a rundown of what they're going to chant and when, and it was completely ridiculous. Like I said, it was a fail. It reminded me of that scene in The Sopranos when they whacked that guy in the bathtub because he hijacked a bunch of trucks without permission. And the guy points the gun at him and he says, "Hijack, by Jack." That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, okay, the Chicago Raw came and went, hijack, by Jack, you know, end of story. I mean, I know that a few other Twitters popped up. They have hijack Memphis and hijack Brooklyn, because Raw's coming to Brooklyn in a couple of weeks. I won't be there, but it is coming to town here. It's so stupid. Just give it up already. What exactly do you expect to accomplish? Like, let's look at Raw from this past Monday night. The whole purpose of the movement, and I know they would say, well, we want to support Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and all these other younger guys. It was really a movement built around CM Punk. We want Punk. Those are the chants we heard all night long. We want Punk, which was comical because, again, Punk is the one who walked out on his own. It wasn't like WWE suspended him or sent him home. It was Punk's decision to leave and not come back. So that was comical to me to begin with. So they chanted CM Punk all night long. He never came out. And they mentioned him by name on the pre-show. When I first heard Josh Matthews name drop CM Punk a few minutes before Raw went on the air, I figured, oh, he must be back. I mean, why would they go out of their way to mention him by name unless he was coming back? So it even surprised me a little bit when, at the end of the show, the Authority came out to beat down Daniel Bryan, and here's the perfect opportunity for CM Punk to come from out of nowhere, help Bryan attack Triple H. Didn't happen. And even still, some people are clinging to the hope, well, maybe they really wanted to swerve the fans, because everybody was expecting Punk to be in Chicago. Maybe he'll be in Memphis this Monday night. He's not going to be in Memphis on Monday night. He's not going to be in Brooklyn the week after or whenever the show is coming here. He's gone. He's done. He doesn't want to wrestle for WWE anymore. Maybe he doesn't want to wrestle at all. Who's to say when his contract is up and he has no contractual obligations anymore to WWE that he's going to go somewhere else, that he's going to go back to Ring of Honor or do any... He may just be completely done mentally. He may be finished. And if he is, great. He had a very nice career for himself. I still imagine he'll be back at some point. He's not an old man. He's 35, 36, whatever he is. I am sure we have not seen the last of CM Punk in a WWE ring. Maybe for a few years. Maybe. Guys have gone away and come back before. Chris Jericho went away the first time for 2-3 years and then came back. Shawn Michaels, right? I mean, he was injured, but it's not impossible to think that this guy could be back a year from now, 2 years from now. You know, if he was going to come back, it would have been in Chicago. And it's not just that he wasn't on the show. Yeah, they've done a lot of other things. They've removed him from certain appearances. There was a Wizard World appearance he was supposed to be at in a few weeks. They bumped him for Randy Orton. A lot of the promotional materials and marketing materials that he was part of, they've removed him from that. They put word out to a lot of their licensees to take him off it, and they've replaced him with Orton and other people. This is not all part of some elaborate work. They're doing things that you would expect a company to do if one of their performers was no longer active. So Punk is gone. He's done. He's finished. He doesn't want to be here anymore. That's his prerogative. So he's out of the picture. But you still had all these people on Monday night. We want Punk, CM Punk. And in a way, WWE kind of gave them a reason to chant, I guess, because they certainly gave the impression, based on how they booked the beginning of that show, that he would be there. The way they did certain things, they had me thinking that he was coming out at the end of the show. And a lot of the people in the crowd probably felt the same way, although WWE probably did that on purpose, because they knew well in advance about this hijack movement. And that's one of the things I think that was so stupid and that I didn't really like about it. If you look back at the Royal Rumble, okay, the Royal Rumble was not particularly a good show. It really wasn't. It was one of the, I don't want to say the worst, but it was one of the poorer Royal Rumble pay-per-views they've done in many years. Even though they had that great match with Bryan and Bray Wyatt, it just wasn't really a good show, and it wasn't really a good Rumble at all. But what made it so fun to watch was the reaction of the fans. They crapped on everything they hated. They chanted, they wanted Daniel Bryan in the worst way. They chanted his name. It was natural. That's who they wanted to see. That's who they wanted to see come out in that number 30 spot in the Royal Rumble, and it didn't happen. They had their plan. Batista was going to win. Nothing was going to change that, and so Bryan had no place in the Rumble match. But the fans made it very clear what they liked and what they didn't like. It wasn't, you know, a scripted, rehearsed, pre-planned movement in advance that here's what we're going to do and here's who we're going to cheer for. It was natural. People showed up, and they voiced their reactions in a very natural way. Nobody told them what to do. So WWE got wind of this whole thing, and they were able to prepare for it. And I got to say, I thought Raw Monday Night was a really good show overall. I loved it. I won't say great. I don't know that we'll ever have another truly great episode of Monday Night Raw so long as the show is 3 hours, because you're always going to have that dead period in the third hour that just drags it down. You can't have a perfect show at 3 hours. You can't do it. If this was a two-hour show last Monday, it would be among the greatest episodes they've ever done. 3 hours, I can't really say that. I will say that the first hour of the show on Monday was one of the best hours in Raw history. Just fantastic stuff, hot crowd, which you were going to get anyway in Chicago, nonstop action from start to finish. I know it started with a promo from Heyman, but I thought it was a great promo. And after that, it was pretty much all action for the next 60 minutes into the first even 15 minutes of hour number two. The Paul Heyman promo, the Brock Lesnar attack on Mark Henry, the Usos winning the tag team titles from the New Age Outlaws, the Shield and the Wyatt family, even Big E and Cesaro. You know, that was probably the weakest part of hour one, and even that wasn't bad. Calling it weak doesn't mean it was a bad match. It's just compared to everything else they were doing, I would probably rank that at the very bottom. You know, I love the way that Heyman has rubbed off on Lesnar, where Lesnar now even pronounces his own name as Barack Lesnar, just because Heyman's been doing that for a while. But there was Brock, you know, doing it the same way on Monday Night. Can you imagine if this Barack was the one in the White House right now? Russia would not be invading Crimea. I can promise you that. Poor Mark Henry is all I can say about him. I mean, it's really sad that when his theme music hits now and it says somebody's going to get their ass kicked, you pretty much figure it's going to be Mark Henry. And it was. He got his ass kicked by Brock Lesnar. But, you know, I guess Brock destroyed Big Show already, and they don't have another big guy for Brock to toss around like a rag doll. Kali certainly isn't going to be taking bumps on the floor like Mark Henry did. So he got an F5 through the announce desk. He was left for dead. Brock did throw a monitor at one point. He removed the monitor from the announce desk and threw it. It somehow bounced. There was fan cam footage from a different angle of what happened. And he throws the monitor, it lands in the ring, and somehow it bounced out of the ring and it hit somebody in the audience. It must not have hurt them too badly. I haven't heard that somebody was seriously injured or there was a lawsuit filed. There was a lawsuit chant after that, which was kind of funny. But yeah, Brock's a beast. The Usos beat the Outlaws for the tag team titles. Long overdue. We were told that it was 4 years of hard work for them to get to this point. They had not won the titles in 4 years of being in WWE, which is incredible when you think of the number of guys they put titles on and it really means nothing. Here you have two guys who bust their asses. They got over. The people like them. They get behind them. It's been years. They finally win the big one, and lo and behold, the tag team titles actually felt important for a few minutes on Monday night. I mean, that's not going to last. We all know that. But for one night, it felt like a big deal. You know, some people are complaining they should have waited until WrestleMania. What are you complaining about? Be happy. The old guys did what they were brought in to do. They put the younger guys over and they dropped the straps. So they'll go into WrestleMania defending the titles instead. That's still a pretty good position for them to be in. It's fine, believe me. I had no problem with this at all. I watched the live main event special on the WWE Network the next night, which was flawless for me on the Roku. I don't know how it was for you guys. I had no streaming issues. They were supposed to defend the titles against the Outlaws in a rematch. Road Dogg came out with Billy. He claimed an injury. So instead they did commentary for a title match between the Usos and Los Matadores, who in fact are still employed by WWE. I tell you what, I expected a much better match between these two teams, considering the four guys that were in there, and this match really wasn't anything special. It was good. It was okay. But I expected it to be much better than it was. The Shield and the Wyatt family, I had no such problems with. I had very high expectations for this match after their pay-per-view match at Elimination Chamber, which was the best WWE match of the year so far. This one, you know, it's funny. I was thinking, which one was better? Which one did I like more? I liked the pay-per-view match more. I just felt like it was more chaotic. It was longer. I just thought overall it was a better match. But this was awesome in every conceivable way. I mean, you could say that this match was every bit as good as the pay-per-view match. It certainly wasn't any worse. This was just awesome stuff. I loved everything about this. It was balls-to-the-wall action. Seth Rollins was out of his freaking mind in this match. There were that one sequence where he did a dive out onto, I think it was Rowan on one side, got right back into the ring, immediately ran, did another dive onto Harper on the other side. I mean, he was flying all over the ring like a rubber ball. And I was just thinking to myself, please don't die. I mean, there were a few times he came off the ropes, and I thought, okay, he's going to break an ankle, he's going to hurt his knee. He was a crazy man out there. He looked like a man possessed. He looked like somebody who was on a mission to stand out, is what it looked like to me. And if that was the goal here, mission accomplished. Because I have to tell you, after the last couple of weeks, after that match on Monday, they had that segment on SmackDown that I did see, the Shield Summit, where all three of them were in the ring together. They were trying to hash out their problems. They were slapping each other in the face and pushing and shoving, and it looked like they were going to do the big Shield breakup on SmackDown, which I laughed at. Just the thought that after all these months and months and months, they've been together a year and a half, they've been building this breakup now for a while, that they would actually do the breakup angle on SmackDown was laughable to me. I had one person ask me, you know, if I thought they were going to do it. Of course not. On SmackDown, come on. I don't think they should do it until WrestleMania, quite frankly. And I see these three guys probably wrestling each other at WrestleMania. That doesn't mean they have to break up before then. They could keep building tension, and they could come to an understanding that, listen, you know, I think the only way to settle our differences is to do it in the ring. And they make a match, maybe even for Ambrose's U.S. title at WrestleMania, do a triple threat. I could easily see them doing it because I don't see where else you plug these guys in. You know, they're not going to take one member of the Shield and put them in a singles match. I don't think they're going to do Ambrose and Big E in a unification match. They could. I don't think they will. So what do? Are you going to take two members of the Shield and put them in a tag match, let's say Gauntlet with the Usos and like two or three other teams and put them in a tag title match? Makes no sense to have the Shield fighting for the tag belt at this point if you're just going to break them up. So there is no other logical spot on the card for them unless it's against each other. So I figure that's probably what we're going to get at WrestleMania. And if we get it, I think Rollins is going over in that match. I think whatever issues there are with Reigns and Ambrose continue, Rollins ends up getting the win. And the point I was trying to make was that between that match and the Shield Summit, where Rollins did most of the promo work on Friday night, his promos have come very far from where they were at the beginning. He was a little shaky on the mic when the Shield first came up. You know, Reigns was still very inexperienced if you go back and watch him then compared to now. Rollins wasn't exactly a great promo guy. Ambrose, I think, has always been great when it comes to that kind of stuff. Ambrose was also awesome on Friday night. But Rollins is the one who stands out to me. Rollins has really stepped up his game. He's really gone above and beyond to try to stand out because everyone's talking about Roman Reigns as the next big thing and Dean Ambrose is awesome and he's going to be this great heel, this great villain. But I feel like Rollins a lot of times gets the shaft, and what he's been able to do over the last couple of weeks is turn people in a different direction where I see a lot more people online, a lot more people on Twitter talking about Rollins more than anything else. Rollins has all the tools. I mean, he's good on the mic. He's awesome in the ring. He could be a great heel. He could be a great babyface. I think he could be a much better babyface, actually. I think his future, because that's what he was on NXT when he was the NXT champion, I think his future is as a babyface. But he could play either role very well. And with a guy like him, his strength as a heel is that he can bump around like a maniac. He's kind of like Dolph Ziggler in that way. So everything he does is really, really good. And it would be a crime to overlook that just because, well, we've got big plans for Roman Reigns because he's big and he looks good, and because Dean Ambrose, well, he's Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins ends up, you know, toiling in the mid-card. It would be a crime if that happened because he's so much better than that. All three of these guys can be world champions at some point. Now, it probably hurts them that there's only one title. I guess they could always break them back up and kind of de-unify them. I wouldn't want to see that, but it kind of hurts them in that way. It hurts certain people not having two titles, although I think having one is for the better. But Rollins has stepped up his game. He was really impressive this week on Raw and on SmackDown. And I'm loving everything they're doing with the Shield, and the only thing that makes me sad is that they're going to break up. And I'm in my mind, I'm going over ideas and scenarios where maybe we can get these guys kind of off on their own on a singles path without actually breaking them up because they're so damn good together. And I'm not afraid to say that to me, and I've said this for a while now, that the Shield is the greatest three-man duo that I've ever seen in wrestling. And I know there have been a lot of great trios over the years in WWE, WCW, NWA. The Freebirds gets mentioned a lot. And they were great. The Freebirds were very good. But I don't think the Freebirds were as good as the Shield. I think the Shield, and part of it is the way they've been booked, because they could have very easily been just booked into oblivion to look like every other guy they bring up. Look at some of the other guys they brought up from NXT. Look at poor Xavier Woods. What the hell has he done since he got brought up? So things could have very easily gone south for these guys, but they have protected them, and this is what happens when you protect guys. Here we are a year and a half later. These guys have been around, and all three of them conceivably could be a world champion. It's amazing how that works when you actually protect guys instead of bury them or put them in a situation, you know, where they're going to fail. They haven't done that with the Shield. But everything they do, they complement each other very well. You know, Reigns is the muscle and he does his thing. Ambrose is kind of crazy and off the wall and unpredictable. And like I said, Rollins is just really, really good. He's a great wrestler. And I love the act. And I can't think of another trio that's better than them. And I think you have to put them up there in the upper echelon when it comes to wrestling factions. Whether it's three guys, four guys, six guys, the NWO, DX, whatever your favorite faction is. I'm not saying the Shield is number one, but you got to put them up there. You know, they've got to be in the conversation when it comes to all-time best groups in wrestling. That's how good these guys are. So it's going to be really a sad day, I think, when they break up. But maybe there's a way. Maybe they can somehow figure out a way to get these guys going off on their own without actually breaking them up. Maybe they could still be friends. And I don't know. I'd have to think about that. You don't have to necessarily break them up. They don't have to turn on each other and all that kind of stuff. And it would be weird if, let's say, Rollins and Reigns became big baby faces, but Ambrose was still a heel. So how do you kind of keep them as friends in that case? But, you know, maybe there's a way. Maybe there's a way. Sheamus and Christian had yet another match. That's where Jerry Lawler's gem came from, where he mentioned that Sheamus was Italian before quickly correcting himself. Not before being mocked by Michael Cole and JBL. So Sheamus won the match with a brogue kick. Christian beat him up later on backstage, so that probably sets up another match, I would imagine, between them for WrestleMania. Those are two guys I also can't really see another spot for, unless it's against each other, or they stick them in some Battle Royal-type multi-man match. I have no problem with that. The only issue is they've already wrestled so many times, and they could still wrestle yet even more times between now and the pay-per-view, that by the time WrestleMania rolls around, I feel like there's got to be a stipulation or something to make that match feel special and different than the ones we've already seen. And this match got crapped on pretty hard by the Chicago crowd. They did not deserve some of the chance that they got. They got this is awful chance. I will say, this was not the best Christian Sheamus match, and there were some spots where it was a little dull, but I felt bad for these guys. You know, they're out there, clearly they were busting their asses, and they're getting this is awful chance, so I didn't think the match was awful. I disagreed with that. Then we have Daniel Bryan confronting the Authority. And I will say that I've not seen Triple H and Stephanie. Stephanie in particular get this kind of heat since this whole angle started. She was getting so much heat and so many boos from the crowd. I could not, it was hard for me to understand what she was saying. And I had emails from people who were in the building who said they couldn't hear her at all. I mean, they just were chanting and assuming that she was saying bad stuff about Daniel Bryan because they couldn't make out the words that were coming out of her mouth. It was so loud in the building. And again, I think Chicago is one of the better crowds, and part of that may have been the hijacked people who were chanting for Punk and Bryan and whatever. But it made for a great atmosphere in the segment. WWE got exactly what they wanted. They got great heel heat on the heels. And what's funny about this is they had Bryan come out, and Bryan used the word hijack in his promo. At one point, he rallied the crowd and said, "Let's hijack Raw." And like puppets, everybody cheered. They said, "Yeah, let's hijack the show." So I think it was brilliant on WWE's part the way they manipulated the crowd, because the crowd thought they were there to hijack the show. In reality, WWE hijacked the crowd, and they didn't even realize it. So I thought that was a brilliant move on their part. you know, kind of working that into the show in a very subtle way, and the fans just went along with it, just like they were supposed to. So we had some loud asshole chants during the segment for Triple H, just like the old days. And once again, he rejected Bryan's challenge to a match at WrestleMania. You know, why would I wrestle a B-plus player? Why would I lower myself to wrestle somebody like you? WrestleMania is the biggest event of the year. I wrestle legends and big stars, and you're none of them. And he told Bryan to get out of the ring. Bryan said, why don't you make me? Which led to Stephanie calling Kane to come to the ring. And Bryan did a tope onto Kane out on the floor. Stephanie had security take Bryan to the back. He was still going to come back out later to wrestle Batista in the main event. So this was a hot segment in terms of how the crowd was reacting, in terms of further building the story for Bryan and Triple H. It's obvious they're going to wrestle at WrestleMania. You know, the whole thing about Bryan getting a title match, I still think he's getting the championship at WrestleMania. You can call me a fool if you want to. I think the end game here is that Bryan ends WrestleMania with 75,000 people chanting yes and a big championship celebration to end the pay-per-view. That's how I see WrestleMania. You want to know what I think the WrestleMania ending is? There's your WrestleMania ending right there, and I think it's going to happen. I don't know how they're going to get to that point. We have several more weeks before we have to worry about that, but I just can't imagine any other ending to the show this year. I certainly can't imagine that Batista and Randy Orton, as things stand, go one-on-one in the final match on the card, and that's how the show ends, with Batista winning the title. I don't see it. It's not impossible, but it's pretty damn close. I don't see that happening. So I'm just going to enjoy the ride. We'll see how they get there. I trust that in the end, things will work themselves out. And you know what? Even if it doesn't, what the hell are you going to do? Bryan is in a great spot right now. If he's not in a championship match at WrestleMania, he's still in one of the main event matches. And in fact, if he's not in the title match and they have the guts to keep Batista versus Orton as it is, which I think they would be fucking nuts to do, but if they do that, there's no way Batista versus Orton goes on last. So then it becomes an issue of, well, what do you put on last? The only match to me that would make sense would be Bryan versus Triple H. You know, and I know, oh, Triple H, main eventing WrestleMania, but in this case, it would make sense. You just can't end the show with Batista versus Orton one-on-one. You can't do that. Any other year, I would say Undertaker's match would have to be a consideration for the main event. You know, I don't see Undertaker Brock as being, you know, the final match on the card. You always run the risk with the Undertaker of him going out there having a kick-ass match, even if his opponent has to kind of carry him physically. I think it's a combination of having the right opponent and just the aura of the streak and all the near falls, and it can take the energy right out of the crowd. You always run the risk when you don't put his match on last of burning out the crowd for whatever comes next. I certainly hope they don't do Undertaker Brock and then immediately do Bryan versus Triple H. I'm sure Triple H also wouldn't like that, because Triple H more than once has found himself in that position having to follow the Undertaker. Last year, for example, and the crowd was mostly dead for his match, just like they were his match against Orton at WrestleMania 25. How could you top what Undertaker and Shawn Michaels did on that card? And how could you not know going in that those two guys were going to go out there and have the kind of match that they had? So poor Triple H has had this happen to him now really three different times at a WrestleMania, if you count the Rock Hogan match at 18, and then him and Jericho went out there and they had a good match, but the crowd didn't care. The crowd was just like, eh, whatever. Yeah, and I felt bad for Jericho. That's his one and only WrestleMania main event, and nobody cared. So believe me, I'm sure Triple H does not want to be put in that position again. Bryan versus Triple H is the only match that makes sense for the main event, unless Bryan is inserted into the championship match. So I'm just going to wait and see how things play out. But like I was saying before, Bryan is in a good position compared to where he was a year ago. Look at where he is now. Supposedly, post-WrestleMania, him and Cena are the top two guys that are going to be factored into plans going forward. Cena number one, Bryan number two. It's not a bad spot to be in. Essentially, Bryan is getting CM Punk's spot. CM Punk leaving has only helped Daniel Bryan, because Punk was the number two guy. He was the number two babyface before, and now that spot belongs to Bryan. So he'll be in a headline match at Mania. He'll get the title at some point. And things are going good, and he finally has some decent merchandise on top of everything else. They got rid of a lot of the crappy shirts. He's got some merchandise that I wouldn't be embarrassed to be seen wearing on the street. So things are going well for the guy, and I'm happy to see that. Dolph Ziggler, on the other hand, a little more questionable. Dolph Ziggler has not had a very good stretch these last several months. He had a good night on Monday. He came out with Aaron Paul, who was the guest host, or the guest star. I guess he didn't host. But he came out in a sports car for his match against Alberto Del Rio. Aaron Paul was there to promote his new Need for Speed movie, hence the car. He'll always be Jesse Pinkman to me. And apparently to the WWE fans who started a Jesse Pinkman chant during the show on Monday night. Jesse Pinkman chant on Monday Night Raw. I never thought I'd hear that. Breaking Bad, though. Oh, Breaking Bad was such a fucking great show. If you'd never watch Breaking Bad, you're really missing out. You got to go back and watch that show. I cannot recommend it enough. So Ziggler won after Aaron Paul got up on the announce table and distracted Del Rio. Ziggler zigzagged him, and he got the pin. So Dolph's on a roll, I guess, for the time being. They officially announced Paul Bearer as the next inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2014. Not a big surprise there. There was a lot of rumors last year when he was not inducted that they were holding off one more year. And I think at the time I even said that it was a good idea to do that because he was a big fan of Mardi Gras in New Orleans. You know, he lived down in that area. He lived in Alabama, but he was down in that, you know, Bible Belt area. And he would always go to Mardi Gras. And I even posted a very terrifying picture on my Facebook from many years ago. He had a blog that he maintained. And he posted a picture once of himself dressed in drag. Now imagine Paul Bearer dressed in drag. Yeah, exactly. Try to bleach that from your mind. But he was a big fan of that whole thing. So the idea of him going into the Hall of Fame in New Orleans kind of makes sense. I think it's kind of an appropriate place for him to be honored and for him to be inducted. I don't know if The Undertaker is going to be the one doing the induction. Part of me thinks it would make more sense to have The Undertaker accept on his behalf. I know normally they have the family do it, but if the family is cool with it, you could even have the family do the induction. You know, they could talk about their dad, they could talk about his career, and then have Undertaker come out, accept the award. He doesn't even have to speak. He can come out, he can accept the award, he could do some kind of salute, hold it up in the air, and he could walk off. So, you know, even if Undertaker is there, I don't think it means he's going to do a speech. I still have a hard time, you know, reconciling the idea of Undertaker doing a speech at the Hall of Fame unless it's his own. Or you can even have Kane do the induction, have Undertaker accept. I think even more than the family, I think that would be the most appropriate way to go. If the family's okay with it, have Kane do the induction. You know, Kane, he's corporate Kane now, so he can do a speech. And have Undertaker accept. You can have both of them. I know Kane's a heel, but so what? You can have both of them on stage at the same time, honoring Paul Bearer. And then, again, they walk off together. I like that idea, actually. I would expect Scott Hall is going to be announced very soon. I don't know if he'll be the next one. There's been a lot of rumors about Mr. T. Maybe they put the whole WrestleMania 1 main event in the Hall of Fame. Scott Hall, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion that he's going in. I figured he was going in for sure when I noticed that him and all the other people who have been announced so far for the Hall of Fame all got verified by Twitter at the same time. I thought that was a big tip-off. But apparently X-Pac let it slip on an indie show this past week that he would be inducting Scott Hall. Which, if he is, that makes sense, given they were buddies in the clique, but the two of them were involved in one of the best angles in company history. And an angle that helped launch Waltman's career. The whole upset on Raw where 1-2-3 Kid pinned Razor Ramon. After that, you know, that launched the Kid off as a singles guy in WWE. Launched his career. So it would make sense if he's the one to do it. Kevin Nash would make sense also, but it could be either one of those guys. It doesn't have to be Nash. Main event was Batista and Daniel Bryan. Pretty big match. Didn't even get started until after 11 o'clock, so I didn't think it was going to go very long. It did not. It didn't even have a legitimate finish. Randy Orton was at ringside watching. He was observing. At one point, the action spilled out to the floor. I think it was, I think Batista sent Bryan into Orton, or maybe it was the other way around, but Orton ended up coming into the ring. He attacked Bryan for the DQ, so we got a fuck finish here. Authority came out, and this is the point where myself, I think, and a lot of people were figuring, okay, where's Punk? Punk's going to come out of the crowd, or he's going to attack Triple H, but that never happened. Showing off the air with the Authority laying out Bryan. Not the first time we've seen that. Probably won't be the last. Kind of a flat ending, I guess, because a lot of people were disappointed Punk didn't show up. But that's how Raw went off the air on Monday night. I thought overall, like I said, it was a really, really good show. That first hour, I would put that first hour of Raw up against any other hour in the history of the show. I would put that first hour up there with the hour from the, what was it, State College. It was in Pennsylvania. The Raw back in April of 2000 where Chris Jericho beat Triple H. Remember that? They opened the show with a title match between Jericho and Triple H. It wasn't supposed to be for the title. Jericho goaded Triple H. He kept insulting Stephanie. He goaded him into putting the title on the line. Jericho had paid for his own protection because he kept getting screwed. So he had the APA come out to make sure nobody interfered and to protect him. And they had a really good match. Jericho won the belt. The place went nuts. It was crazy. It was insane. And the angle continued for another segment after that. They went to commercial, came back. They had Triple H and Shane and Stephanie. Triple H had Earl Hebner, dragged him out of the locker room, back to the ring. He wanted him to reverse the decision, which he ended up doing. But there was, like, that first half hour plus of that episode of Raw was about as hot as you'll ever see. And I oftentimes, you know, think back to that because it's all about pacing. It's all about how you structure these shows. So many times you get one really good match, you get one really hot segment, and the rest of it is just, you know, dog crap. And it's kind of bookended by all these boring skits and promos and dance contests and all the other loony shit that they'll do. But when you have an hour that's just wall-to-wall nonstop action like that, it really makes the show feel hot. And that's how it felt on Monday night. I wish we could recapture that every week, but it was a special show on Monday. I enjoyed it. The post-show was a little weird because they had the setup where they're in the arena. And when the show went off the air, Big Show came out to come to Brian's rescue. Cena hobbled out to come to Brian's rescue. And they did one of those deals that they do sometimes post-show where Orton's the only one left out there now, and he's surrounded by all the baby faces, and they take turns doing their moves to him. All of this is happening in the background. You can see it. You can hear it, but they're not showing it. They're completely ignoring it. So, like, Big Show's music hits. He comes out. They very briefly cut back to the ring, and you see Big Show. And as soon as he goes into the ring to fight off the Authority, they cut back so we can listen to frickin' Josh Matthews and Hacksaw Jim Duggan talk about, you know, what happened on Raw. I'm like, I want to see what's going on in the ring. I don't want to hear from you guys. No offense, but fuck, put the camera back on the ring. So that was kind of weird. It was also weird hearing Hacksaw Jim Duggan explain that the reason the Authority won't get behind Daniel Bryan, maybe, is because he doesn't have the wins that he needs over some big names. I guess names like John Cena and Randy Orton aren't big enough for Jim Duggan, who clearly has not been paying attention to the product. I mean, I love Hacksaw, but come on. That was kind of ridiculous to say. Hulk Hogan will be back on Raw this Monday in Memphis, supposedly with a WrestleMania announcement. So I can only imagine that Brooke is going to be singing the national anthem, brother. Or maybe that'll be the Mr. T announcement, now that I think about it. That actually would make sense if they were going to have Hogan announce that Mr. T was going into the Hall of Fame, or that all of them were being inducted into the Hall of Fame, the first WrestleMania main event. I know Piper is still milling around. Roddy Piper badly wants to wrestle Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. Thankfully, that's not going to happen. But Piper wants to be there in some way, in some capacity. Why not do a Piper's Pit? Do a Piper's Pit with all the guys from the WrestleMania main event. You'll have Hogan and Mr. T there. You can probably bring in Cowboy Bob Orton and his cast, and Paul Orndorff, he's still around. You could bring him in as well. Or maybe they go in a different direction. You could even have Roddy Piper host Piper's Pit with Hulk Hogan, who's the host, and the Ultimate Warrior, who's the headliner in the Hall of Fame. Imagine that, Hogan and Warrior face-to-face on Piper's Pit. That'd be pretty cool. So that's what I would do. I don't know if Piper's actually going to be on the show on April 6th or not, but he wants to be, so we'll see what happens. And it would make sense for him to be there, just given that he's the star of this Legends House show, which is starting, I think, right after WrestleMania. I think that week, that Thursday, on the network, that show debuts. So Piper's going to be doing promotion for the show. He probably should be at WrestleMania promoting it. On Thursday, NXT made its debut on the WWE Network, which will be its new home from now on every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, so it'll be head-to-head with the first hour of TNA Impact. It is still being published on Hulu as well. And I was of the impression from what I had read that it was going to be going up on Hulu from now on Friday. So it would hit the network first on Thursday nights, and then the next morning it would be up on Hulu. But apparently it was up on Thursday morning on Hulu before it even aired on the network. So I don't know if that was just a one-week mistake, if that's Hulu's way of saying up yours to WWE, or what the deal is there. But it will be on the network from now on every Thursday night at 9. The show has a new theme song, which you heard a clip of there. Roar of the Crowd by CFO Money has officially replaced Welcome Home by Coheed and Cambria as the official NXT theme song. Not a bad song. I actually kind of like it, but I am going to miss the old song. Adrian Neville, new NXT champion, opens the show. He beat Camacho in the opener. And you know, it was just, you know, a 3-minute showcase for the new champion, really just to do his big move, the Red Arrow, at the end. Was it Renee Young? I think Renee Young got in the ring to do an interview with the new champion when the match was over. And boy, Neville must have botched this promo something fierce at the NXT tapings with all these jump cuts. You could not count how many jump cuts and edits were in this thing. For what was really a short, basic promo, it wasn't like he went on for 5 minutes. He cut a short promo that was just completely butchered in the editing. So he must really, that must have been something to watch live if they had to do so many edits to it. The gist of the promo was he admitted that he's not much to look at. He's very short. He mocked his height. He referred to himself as Elf Man at one point, which I didn't like. I was not a fan of this part of the promo because we already have one Daniel Bryan on TV. That's what he essentially was doing here. This is like the NXT version now of Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, for the longest time, would go out there and he would say, I know I'm not the biggest. I look like a goat. Everybody would call him Goatface. So now we have Elfman. We have Goatface on the main roster, and now we have Elfman on NXT. Both of whom are not mid-card guys. They're not job guys. These are guys that are champion or that are in the title mix, and we're supposed to take them seriously. I mean, this guy is the NXT champion. He just won the title, had a big celebration on the arrival special, comes out on this show, he beats Camacho, and now he's on the stick talking about, you know, I look like an elf. That's Brian's shtick. Let him do it. You know, he's the one who comes out and says, I don't look like a champion, I look like a goat, and all that kind of stuff. I don't need to see Adrian Neville doing the same thing in developmental. I did appreciate the admission that he can be difficult to understand with that Geordi accent. Okay, because I've been saying that for months. I didn't say it to be offensive or anything like that. It can be very hard to follow this guy when you hear him speak and when you hear him. Maybe in conversations he sounds fine, but when he's trying to cut a wrestling promo, he's probably reading from, you know, lines that they want him to speak, and he's out there, it's very hard sometimes to understand. And even when you do understand, you know, he sounds kind of funny. And it's hard to, you know, it could be hard to take a guy like that seriously. And I really think that's going to work against him once he makes it up to the main roster. And I don't see there being a manager out there right now that you can put him with who could do the talking for him. Paul Heyman, you got to turn him heel and make him a Paul Heyman guy. So who's going to be out there to be this guy's mouthpiece if his promos are his weak point? And it's not, forget the accent for a second. I don't really look at him as being this great promo guy. Wow, he's out there like a Bray Wyatt cutting these awesome promos. Not really. You know, his strength is in the ring. His strength is doing all those flashy moves. His selling point, let's be honest, is his finishing move. His finishing move is what makes him stand out. There is nothing else about what Adrian Neville does in NXT that makes him any different than anybody else. He's got some other flashy moves. He can do a couple of, you know, backflips in a row, standing backflips. A lot of the really, really cool stuff that he did on the indies when he was Pac, they don't let him do that in NXT. They want you to slow it down, keep it simple. Don't do all those flippy floppy things, right? That's their mentality. It's like when Triple H did that conference call a couple of weeks ago before the arrival special. He did a conference call with a bunch of media people, and he was talking about his philosophy at NXT, and he talked about his philosophy about a lot of different things, including guys from the indies that they bring in and some guys who maybe they won't bring in because to them, and this is what he said, it's a lot easier to just break in guys who don't have 8 years of experience doing things a certain way. They want you to follow their playbook. He admitted it. He said, yeah, that's right. We don't want you to do things the way that you did in Japan or that you did at some indie show somewhere. We want you to do things our way. We want you to run our playbook. We're bringing you into play on our team. We want you to do things our way because we think that our way is the successful way. So there were a lot of really crazy things this guy would do, and you could look up any of his old matches on YouTube. And do you see him doing half that shit in WWE? No. So his finish is what's going to, I think, separate him from everybody else. And in that way, I hate to say it, he's not all that much different than Evan Bourne. Him and Evan Bourne are both very good wrestlers. They're very good high flyers. I think they could be very good baby faces. I see them as baby faces, not heels. But what was Evan Bourne known for? He was known for his finishing move. Same thing with Adrian Neville. So I don't know, once he's brought up, I don't really know how far that they're willing to go with this guy on the main roster. So I worry about his future, I guess, in that respect. But it was still nice to hear him just acknowledge on as part of this promo that, you know, it can be hard to understand me because of the accent, and it's true. But I think that could also work against him. Bo Dallas came out. He said that he would be cashing in his rematch, just not tonight. He'll be getting his rematch very soon. They had a couple of different promos taped after last week's Arrival special where Ric Flair and his daughter Charlotte confront first Emma, then Paige. Charlotte had a match on this show with Emma and beat her after feigning an ankle injury. Sasha Banks was out there with Charlotte, part of the BFF group that they have. Summer Rae was not there, although Sasha Banks did have a cutout of Summer Rae's face on a stick that she brought to the ring with her. But hey, Summer Rae's moving on up in the world, you know. She's on the main roster now. She's part of Total Divas now, this second season that they, I think, premieres in the next week or so. And she's also going to be in the next WWE movie that they do. Her and The Miz are going to be in the Marine Four. So hopefully her head does not get as big as the cutout that Sasha Banks had on NXT this week, as we've seen with other divas in the past. I won't name any names, Sable and Chyna. So, Charlotte, here in this match, she did a kip-up to her feet. Emma was distracted by Sasha, and Charlotte wasn't really injured. She kipped up and nailed her buff blockbuster finish. I forgot what she calls it, but it's like a buff blockbuster. Buff used to do the move off the ropes. She does it standing. Looks kind of clunky, but she laid out Emma with it, got the pin. So the second straight loss for Emma, who I don't think is likely to be around much longer on NXT, if I had to take a guess. And that sucks, because if she's off NXT, you know, to do more mixed tags on the main roster with Santino, what a gross misuse of her as a talent if that's the only thing they've got planned for this girl, I think. On the other hand, looks like Charlotte is gunning for Paige's title very soon, so she'll be next in line for a women's championship match. By the way, these women got better than Batista chance during their match, if you can believe that. Charlotte and Emma got better than Batista chance during their match on NXT. I actually felt bad for Big Dave when I heard that. I know he gets gassed pretty easily these days, but come on. He's not that bad. Stop beating up on the guy. Plus, he's a heel now. He's so much better as a heel than he was as a babyface. Because the thing with Batista now, he's out there. He's cutting promos about, where are all the real men? I'm tired of seeing these 190-pound weaklings. They look like fans. When did fans become allowed to get in the ring and be WWE superstars? And he's saying all this stuff in these promos, and it's getting under people's skin. But I love it because I really honestly believe that deep down he believes that. I really do. I think on some level, what he is saying in those promos, at least I can believe that he believes that. And those are some of the best promos. When the guys, what they're saying, it's not just shit on a page. It's like, you know what? This guy probably really does think that. What an asshole. So that's what I love about heel Batista. So at least now he's not completely miscast. So stop knocking the guy. Corey Graves came out for a match with Yoshitatsu, who looks a little pudgier around the midsection than I last remember him. Poor guy's probably been binge eating since they told him he couldn't move to Texas to be in that community of Japanese folks. Remember that whole story? Supposedly he went to WWE, told them, hey, I found a community of Japanese people down in like Houston. Can I move there? And they said, no, you have to be here in Orlando to do your drills at the Performance Center every morning. So anyway, this poor guy comes out, he's standing there, and Corey Graves cuts a promo before the match, very upset that he was passed over for the Arrival special. And he singled out Sami Zayn. So you knew where this was going. This is the next feud for Sami. Then he acted like Tatsu was beneath him. He went to leave, which was just a trap to sucker poor Yoshi in for the kill. He beat the crap out of him, threw Tatsu into the ring steps. And for the first time in maybe ever that I can remember, a guy got thrown shoulder first into the ring steps and failed to make it back into the ring for the 10 count. So Graves gets the count out win. He attacked Yoshi after the match, put him in his lucky 13 leg lock. Sami Zayn came out for the save. He challenged him to a match for later in the show. I could see Corey Graves getting over with women on the main roster with his look. He's got this, I guess, this bad boy image, but I got to be honest with you, the guy bores me to tears. I don't know what it is. He just does. Xavier Woods is pissed that Alexander Rusev attacked him on the Arrival special last week, so he challenged him to a match in a promo backstage. Later on, we got some words from the Bulgarian, in Bulgarian, I should say, from the Bulgarian. Lana translated it into an acceptance of Xavier's challenge. So they're going to have a match. I don't know when. I guess maybe this week on NXT. But, man, they have done nothing. They've done less than nothing with Xavier Woods since he got called up to the main roster. It's almost like the only reason they even brought him up in the first place was so that they could get him on commentary those few times, and he can talk about how he's got a PhD. And they send him out to do a lot of these Be a Star rallies and stuff, and they have him talk about how he's got a PhD, and it's like, is that the only reason? Is that literally the only reason you guys called this guy up? Is so that it makes you look good to have a wrestler on your roster that has a PhD or is going for his PhD? Sure seems that way to me. Devin Taylor now she's the backstage interviewer who has essentially replaced Renee Young, who doesn't really do the backstage stuff anymore. Renee is more, she'll be brought out to do commentary on some of the women's matches, and she'll do in-ring interviews. So at least she's still there. She's very good. Devin Taylor, not as good, but improving. So they have this pre-tape deal where Devin Taylor is at a party for Adam Rose. Now, you remember many, many weeks ago on the Sound Off, I mentioned that Leo Kruger was no more. They had he underwent a gimmick transformation. He was portraying this rock and roll type character called Adam Rose on some of the house shows, and it was just a matter of when he was going to debut on the TV show. Well, this was the debut of Adam Rose on NXT. And so Devin Taylor is at this party. They've got Solomon Crowe, the former Sami Callihan. He's there as the DJ. So he still technically has not debuted on NXT in the Solomon Crowe character. But there he was. He was the DJ at the party. And apparently Kalisto was there, the former Samurai del Sol. I didn't notice him at first, but I had a few people mention that he was in the background as part of the party as well. I think it was all probably just developmental guys that haven't debuted yet. So there's this big party going on. And she goes over to Adam Rose, is all laid out on the couch, looking all chill, and she's talking to him. And anyway, this all led to his actual debut later on in what is probably, not probably, in what is the greatest entrance now in WWE. He has officially replaced Tyler Breeze as the best entrance, I think, in the company. And Tyler Breeze is right behind him. I still love Tyler Breeze, but this was great. He comes out to World Goes Wild, which is by Above Envy. It's a great song. I could have sworn that they... Did they use this song on Impact when the Wolves made their debut, when MVP made his debut? Because I went and I downloaded the song right after that episode of Impact aired, because I could have sworn they played that song on Impact. I've seen no mention of it at all, so maybe I completely imagined it. But I had already started listening to this song like a month ago. It's great. And so apparently he's using it as his entrance theme music. He comes out with all the people from his party, all the developmental guys. It's like this gigantic party, and the music is playing, and they're just coming down to the ring. He gets up on the apron, and then he falls off, and they body surf him. The whole entrance got "This is awesome" chants before the match even started. I've never seen "This is awesome" chants for an entrance before. It's the first time I can honestly say that I ever remember seeing that. The guy is already over. It's his first night, and he's already over. So, a big, big improvement over the Leo Kruger character. I know some of you guys were a fan of the Leo Kruger character. I know some people even thought they might bring him up as the the new member of the Shield, if let's say Roman Reigns was kind of dumped, or if they want to bring a fourth member of the Shield in. I don't know where that came from. I mean, Leo Kruger in the Shield, really? I don't know anybody in their right mind who thought that would work. Because the guy's character was that of this, like a nomad, like the South African nomad. I don't even know how to describe it, really. And he's a good wrestler, but he bored me to tears. There was nothing about the character that made me go, oh, I can't wait to see this guy on Monday Night Raw. Like, I didn't care. I didn't give a shit. Well, now he's got some personality. He's out there. His entrance is great. The people are into it. And again, as a wrestler, he's fine. He can deliver in the ring. That's not really the issue. It was more an issue of character than anything else. And it's only been one night, but I love the character. You know, it's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to see it in execution. And I thought the way they did this on Thursday was great. It was great. Clearly, the fans in the arena thought it was great. I was worried that during the match, they were going to start chanting Leo Kruger to kind of, you know, mock him and rib him. They didn't really do that at all. They were so into the new character, it was almost like nobody even thought, nobody even remembered what Leo Kruger was or who he was. So, in that respect, it was a huge success. Clearly, the character is a copy off Russell Brand's character in Get Him to the Greek or Saving Sarah Marshall. He basically plays the same character. So he had a match against Wesley Blake. He beat him in pretty short order. He actually beat him with the slice, which was not his finisher. The slice clothesline used to be his setup move, which I guess now maybe is his finisher. He may need a new finish, but I loved everything about the Adam Rose presentation on night one. We'll see night two, night three, and so on and so forth. But this was great. This was a huge improvement from Leo Kruger, as far as I'm concerned. Sami Zayn and Corey Graves, main event. Sami Zayn wins with a roll-up. Not much to it. It's hard. I don't know what it is. It's hard for me to get into Corey Graves' matches. It's like every time he would have a match with Adrian Neville, because they used to be tag team partners, okay? They were the champions. Then Corey Graves went heel. They lost the belts. And actually, they lost the belts first. Then he turned on Neville. And they had a whole series of matches, and all of those matches were so freaking boring. And maybe it was just the way they set it up. All those matches were the same. He would go after Neville's knee. He would work over the knee. And it was just, oh, enough already. Because I've seen plenty of Adrian Neville matches that are very exciting, but every match he had with Corey Graves, I was not a fan of. So maybe it's a Corey Graves thing. I don't know. I mean, maybe I just have to see more of the guy. Maybe when they bring him up to the main roster, it'll be different. But I didn't really care much for the match. Zayn wins. So I don't know if that means the feud is already over or if they're going to continue it. I guess we'll find out. Watching this on the network, I had no streaming issues. The quality, for me, the quality wasn't really good. It looked more like 360p on my TV, but I don't have an HD TV, so that could probably be why it didn't look that good. But otherwise, it worked fine, and in a lot of ways, it reminded me of what it used to be like when I was younger watching WWF Superstars on Saturday afternoons. Actually, it was Saturdays at noon here that it used to air. Just an hour of pretty straightforward pro wrestling. You have a handful of matches, some squashes, built to a feature match at the end. You've got some promos in between, and it's easy to follow. You know, you'll probably see a big angle every now and then, like you used to on Superstars, but it's largely just a way to get over a bunch of new personalities, for them to get over their moves. So it's kind of a throwback in a way. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's another way to show your support for The Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/solomonster. Time for the Impact Report. They have a pay-per-view this weekend, Lockdown in Miami, which is taking place tonight as I am recording this. one of the rare TNA pay-per-views that they have left during the year. I'm going to have a full rundown of the card with predictions after the Impact reports. So let's talk about Thursday's show first. I believe this was the final taped show from overseas. This was the second show from London, England. And they addressed the bromans winning back the tag team titles by very briefly showing footage of them from the Wrestle 1 show in Japan. No mention of the fact that they actually didn't pin the Wolves for the belts. It was a three-way with a Japanese team that they beat. I figured they would play this up more, but they did no such thing. This is where them taping in the UK so far in advance comes back to bite them on the ass. Tag team titles have now changed hands twice, once in the U.S. at a house show, and once in Japan. And yet here, they're right back in London. Kind of kills the illusion that these shows are live, I think. Unless they want everybody to know that they're watching shows that are 2 or 3 weeks old. So it makes it even dumber that they still use the Impact Live hashtag for these shows. It's so obvious these shows were taped weeks ago. You come up with a different hashtag. Why not Impact London, right? Or Impact UK or something like that. But no, they have Impact Live up in the corner of the screen. We had all the parties involved in the big Lethal Lockdown match this weekend in the ring to open the show, including Delusional Dixie, who cut a promo on MVP vowing her team would win. And this ended in a brawl, which led to an elimination match between the two teams to determine who gets the man advantage at the pay-per-view. Good news is the heels got the man advantage, which is the opposite of how TNA has done these things in the past. Normally, you would have the heels get the advantage to stack the deck against the babyfaces and build drama. That's the way that makes the most sense. It took TNA a few years to get the hang of it, but it looks like they finally got the memo. It came down to Bobby Roode and Davey Richards, with Austin Aries having just been eliminated. He came back in with the steel chair, attacked Davey's shoulder with it. He was hurt, so referee Earl Hebner said he would give Davey 1 hour to heal up and resume the match, or else they would forfeit to Team Roode. Eric Young beat Sam Shaw by DQ. Shaw splashed some hot tea in his face that he had brought down to the ring with him. He was dunking a tea bag into his tea on his way to the ring. So, yes, you might say Sam Shaw was teabagging on his way to the ring. There's a joke in there for you. He attacked Ken Anderson at ringside. Ken Anderson had come out before the match to... Basically, he did the ring intros for the match, and he referred to Sam Shaw as a creepy bastard stealing Christian's old creepy little bastard gimmick, when they used to call him CLB on TV every week. So after he splashed the tea in Eric Young's face, he went over to Anderson and he put him in that judo choke, choked him out. After that, he went to the back in search of Christy Hemme, who wisely did not come out to do ring announcing for the match. She was in the back hiding, and he was going to go find her. EC3 came to the ring, said he had a new leg lock that he was going to use to beat Kurt Angle at Lockdown in their cage match. This brought out Angle in street clothes. He was limping very badly. Hopefully it was all just for the storyline. Once he got in the ring, EC3 bailed, and he just walked to the back. So Kurt's standing there. He's like, all right, well, he waves to the crowd and exits the ring and goes to walk backstage. And Carter comes back out. He clips Kurt in the bad knee. He ends up getting him in his new leg lock submission, leaves Kurt laying. This sure looked like an injury angle, even though later in the show they were still advertising their match for the pay-per-view. And sure enough, the next day on Friday, the news came from TNAWrestling.com that the match between Kurt Angle and EC3 is indeed off the pay-per-view. And on their website, they posted that TNA officials have been informed Kurt Angle has a torn MCL in his knee as a result of the attack by Ethan Carter. Angle is scheduled to undergo surgery to repair his MCL. As a result of this unfortunate injury, Kurt Angle will be unable to compete at this Sunday's Lockdown pay-per-view event. So EC3 on Twitter has vowed that he will be at the pay-per-view. He will have a new opponent. It's a mystery opponent. Nobody knows who it's going to be. And I have no idea who it's going to be. The reality here is that Kurt Angle already had knee surgery, and he's just not ready to go. So I guess it's a case where they announced the match hoping he would be ready, and he's not, so they canceled it. The whole thing is just stupid. I mean, why even promote a match with the guy in the first place if you know there's a good chance he's not even going to be on the show? So this whole thing turned out to be a giant waste of time. The good news is that Kurt Angle will not die in the ring this weekend, attempting another lunatic moonsault off the top of the cage. So that's good. Kenny King is coming back. We got a vignette for him. He was riding in limos surrounded by beautiful women, traveling all over Las Vegas. Tough job, but somebody's got to do it. Velvet Sky, ODB, and Madison Rain beat the alpha female, Gail Kim, and Lady Tapa when Velvet pinned the alpha female, who is, I guess, supposed to be Chris Benoit's new... Chris Benoit, oh my God. Chris Sabin's new girlfriend. Yeah, if I were her, I would stay away from Benoit. So since Velvet beat her here in this match, I guess that ends that feud. I mean, probably not, but I don't need to see them wrestle again, being that she got her revenge. We got another Willow vignette with Jeff Hardy in his alter ego. The vignettes are actually very well done. I like them. I just don't know if Willow is going to be the one in Lethal Lockdown tonight at the pay-per-view, or if Jeff's doing a Joe Park deal where he's playing two characters at once. I'm going to guess, my guess, that we get Willow in Lethal Lockdown, and they acknowledge that Jeff is the guy behind it. You know, he's gone off the deep end. Backstage, Sam Shaw was stalking around looking for Christy Hemme. I'll sum it up this way. He saw a red wig. He thought it was Christy. Instead, it was Anderson wearing the red wig. He beat up Sam Shaw and smeared lipstick all over his face and walked off. So, there you go. They're wrestling on the pay-per-view. It's just an undercard match. Nothing wrong with it. But it'll be an important one for Sam Shaw because it's really the first legit match he's had since he started this gimmick. We got another in-ring promo with Gunner and James Storm. They're also having a match at the pay-per-view. Storm totally outshined Gunner here. Because Gunner's had a few really good promos in recent weeks, but this was not a great night for him. Especially because immediately after Storm cut a promo on him, he kicked him in the crotch and then laid him out with the last call super kick. So, oh well for poor Gunner. Bobby Roode came back out to finish his earlier match with Davey Richards. Brian Hebner was the referee here, even though his father was the referee when the match started earlier. So I have no idea why. Roode and Richards had a good match. Richards was great at, you know, playing the injured babyface in peril. Got the crowd behind him, very sympathetic. But in the end, Roode got him in a crossface and was hyperextending the arm, and the pain was just too much to bear, so Davey tapped out. Team Roode has the man advantage at the pay-per-view. Backstage, Magnus confronted Dixie Carter. Dixie said that you're on your own at Lockdown. Magnus was incredulous. He was taken aback by this revelation that he would have to wrestle a match on his own without any help whatsoever. Must we have pussy world champions in both companies at the same time? Randy Orton comes out on Raw some weeks, and he complains when the authority doesn't interfere on his behalf. They're not there to back him up. Magnus does the same thing with Dixie. I'm begging for a heel world champion with some balls. Like Flair in the 80s. You know, Flair would do his spots where he would beg off and stuff like that, and every now and then I guess the Horsemen would help him. But I think for much of his stretch, even as a heel when he was the champion in the 80s, I mean, he would wrestle on his own. He didn't need help from anybody else. He wasn't begging for people to come out and interfere in his matches. Last I checked, that was a pretty prosperous period for wrestling. They did pretty well for themselves. Be nice to see a heel world champion who's not a complete pussy. Show closed with a face-off between Samoa Joe and Magnus in the ring that ended with Joe locking Magnus in the coquina clutch and forcing him to tap. Magnus, Magnus is very good on promos. I have to say, he carries himself like a star. You know, I know it sounds silly, but I could see him, you know, as a leading man in a WWE film. Like, if he was in WWE, I don't see them booking him as, like, their champion like he would be in TNA, but he's the kind of guy who I think they would look at and say, you know what, this guy can be a star. Let's put him in a movie. Let's give him a push. He's got the look. He may not be the best wrestler, but he's young. He's got something. He's got it. You know, whatever the hell it is. He's got something. He's really, really good. I just, like I said, I wish they wouldn't book him to be such a puss. So, Lockdown is tonight as I am recording this. And some quick predictions here. We'll go through the card from top to bottom. Main event is Magnus and Joe for the championship. I got Magnus over Samoa Joe, especially here. You know, they go off the air on the go-home show with Magnus tapping out and Dixie saying, you're on your own. So it looks like the deck is stacked against Magnus and the title is all but Joe's at the pay-per-view, only it's not. I'm sure in the end Magnus will find a way to retain. So he's my pick. I'll go with Team MVP in the Lethal Lockdown match, MVP Jeff Hardy and the Wolves. They're taking on Team Roode, Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, and the Bromans. I just think it's too early to book MVP as a loser. You know, plus they've couched this whole thing as MVP gets full control of wrestling operations if his team wins. Notice, wrestling operations, not full control of the company. So they could do a deal where MVP runs the wrestling end, he books matches and that sort of thing, but Dixie still hangs around like a freaking stray cat after you feed them. She still hangs around and handles the business end of things. On the other hand, if Bobby Roode's team wins, the stipulation is that Roode gets 10% of the company, which is probably going to be worth about as much as WWE stock if they don't double their TV rights the way they promised, which is to say, it will not be worth much. Gail Kim, Madison Rayne for Madison's Knockouts title. I'll say Gail Kim gets the belt back. Kurt Angle versus EC3 is off the show, so we can scratch that. Gunner versus James Storm. I say we get a non-finish, like a DQ or something, because the feud's going to probably continue. If somebody does get DQ'd, if somebody does win by DQ, I figure Gunner wins the match. Sam Shaw and Mr. Anderson. Shaw needs this win a lot more than Anderson does. He was the one left laying in their final scene on Impact. I have to figure Christy Hemme is playing a role in this finish. I don't think she turns heel and helps Sam Shaw, because that would be incredibly dumb and it would make no sense. But maybe she gets involved and, by accident, she inadvertently helps him win. So I'm going to go with Sam Shaw. Manic, remember him? Bet you don't. But Manic is on the show. He'll be wrestling former AAA star Tigre Uno. They also ran a promo for him on Impact this week, hyping his arrival. And since it's his debut, I'll say Tigre Uno gets the win. Otherwise, what a shitty debut that would be. And finally, Bad Influence and Chris Sabin against the Great Muta, new X Division champions Sonata and Yasufumi Nakanue. These are from men from the Wrestle 1 promotion in Japan. Muta's been wrestling in Japan as Keiji Muto, but I think he's doing the Great Muta gimmick here. So I expect that's the character he'll be portraying on the show. There's no way Muta's losing this match. So I'm going to go with Team Wrestle 1. And that's the card. That's the lockdown card. Hopefully they knock it out of the park, because TNA doesn't have a whole lot of momentum right now. I think partially because they taped so many damn shows from the UK that after a while, it's one thing if Impact tapes and then a week later the show airs. When you've got all of these different tapings and the shows feel so outdated and they're butchering them in the editing phase and you have title changes going on here in the States and in Japan, the titles are changing hands, but yet you're still airing footage these next few weeks from shows that were taped like a month ago. It just makes the product feel very stale. So it'll be good for them to be live on pay-per-view. They'll have a live Impact, I think, this Thursday. They'll get back to taping, I think, at Universal for a few shows. They've got some momentum as far as, Joe being in the driver's seat is the number one contender. Aries is getting a push. He's a heel again. Roode is getting a push. I like that. They're trying to introduce new characters. They've got some people from the Wrestle 1 promotion as part of this working relationship. So there is some momentum there, but they got to get back to being live, and they got to get back to taping shows here in this country, because I think, no offense to the UK, they've got a very passionate fan base, but I think after a month, I think it's time to come back home. So that'll be good to see. Some other news bits here before we get to the mailbag, and I want to mention this because this is a big story. Buck Zumoff is a name that you may or may not know. It depends how long you've been watching wrestling. He used to go by Rock and Roll Buck Zumoff. He'd come to the ring with a boombox. He was a champion in the AWA, Vern Gagne's old promotion. He wrestled as a job guy for WWE, off and on, as an enhancement talent in the 90s. He was actually the first person that Undertaker ever put in a body bag, when Undertaker was doing the body bag gimmick very early on in his run. And he was Triple H's very first opponent when Triple H made his debut on Wrestling Challenge in April of 95. But he also had a history of molesting underage girls. He was sent to jail in July of 86 after being found guilty of sexual misconduct involving a minor. He went to prison in 89 for a while. He actually went to prison for 36 months for sexual conduct with a minor. And then finally, he was arrested on May 27th last year. He was charged with 12 felony counts of criminal sexual misconduct with a family member, believed to be his daughter, who he had not met until she was 15 years old. The abuse allegedly occurred between June of 1999 and June of 2011. So think about that. From 1999, from the Attitude Era, to June of 2011. over 1,800 acts of abuse, she alleges. Just unbelievable. And even more unbelievable and repulsive is that there were plenty of wrestlers who either knew or suspected what was going on, and they said nothing. And only now are they speaking up. They spoke up during the trial. Oh, that's great. That's so nice of them. Bunch of fucking cowards. Every last one of them. And the promoters who continued to book this guy, even after he was already jailed before, on similar charges. And they continued to book him for years. I mean, shit, Barry Bonds stuck needles in his ass and rubbed cream on himself and is blackballed from baseball. No major league team will touch the guy. This guy gets jailed twice for screwing around with underage girls and continues to get booked. And that goes for WWE, too, because like I said, they brought him in, too, to wrestle enhancement matches. Nobody does a background check? It's sad to think about how many guys we probably revere from the 70s and from the 80s in wrestling who may even be in the Hall of Fame for all we know, who were also probably sleeping around with underage girls because apparently this was a common occurrence back in the day. You know, Zumov is hardly the only one who was doing things like that. You know, with his daughter, maybe he was the only one. You know, he may take the cake with that one. So his ass got convicted on Wednesday on all 12 counts against him. And now there's been a 13th count added after he attempted to flee the court after the verdict was read. He asked to use the restroom and then he tried to escape. He was tackled by court officers and now he's going to be charged with escape from custody on top of everything else. The prosecutor wants to make sure this guy does not see the light of day for the rest of his life. And I'm sure he won't. You know, I think his sentencing got pushed back to May 8th. So we'll find out then exactly how much time the guy's going to get. All I can say is, good luck in prison, asshole. You know they just love child molesters in there. Good luck with that. Fucking scumbag. On a lighter note, we learned that Buff Bagwell, former WCW star and the man who many people blame for WCW truly being dead and buried when WWE was going to launch it as its own separate brand in 2001, and they sent Buff Bagwell out to be Booker T's opponent in that one WCW main event on that Monday Night Raw episode from Tacoma, Washington, and the crowd just crapped all over it, and Vince McMahon was so irate that he scrapped all the plans they had to run WCW as a separate brand. They were going to give Raw to WCW and either move Raw to SmackDown's spot on Thursdays or SmackDown would become the WWF show anyway. Buff has a new job. TMZ ran a story this week. He has been hired by Cowboys for Angels, a premium gigolo service targeting lonely and possibly very horny women. Possibly. That's what the story says. Yeah, I'm willing to bet they probably are very horny. No word on whether his mom, Judy, former WCW tag team champion, calls in sick for him when he's not feeling well. JR talked about Judy when he did the Q&A at his one-man show. I forgot to mention this in the video I did on YouTube. But somebody asked him about Buff, or Buff came up, and he was asked about his mom calling the office for her son. Which was, again, a lot of stories go around, and you wonder which stories are true and which ones aren't. But that is a true story, and JR, who was the head of talent relations at the time, talked about it. He says he was as diplomatic about it as he could possibly be when Judy called the office, and he said, in the nicest possible way, he said, next time, you make sure your son calls the office himself when he has an issue and doesn't have his mother call for him. And then he hung up. God, I hope his mother is not one of those older, lonely, horny women. Can you imagine how awkward that would be when he opens the door? On that note, let's go to the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can always email them to me. What a horrible visual. I'm sorry. You could email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, Buff and his mom. You could probably come up with some, like, Brazzer titles for a video like that. That could be a... I'll have to think about that one. You can send me audio questions. We got one audio question this week that I'm going to run in just a second here. You could send them in MP3 format only. Please try to keep them as brief as you can. And you could email them to me as an attachment. Always remember to put your question, even if you're sending in an audio one, include the text of the question in the body of the email. And when you write in, please include your name and where you are from. This week's audio question comes to us from Nate from Hutchinson, Minnesota.
Hey, Soul Monster, it's Nate from Hutchinson, Minnesota. If a new wrestling fan asked me what the best WrestleMania match was to watch, what should I tell them? And if they asked what the best WrestleMania card was, what would you say?
My thanks to Nate for the question. One match he did mention in his extended question that I cut down was Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, WrestleMania 25, which is my favorite WrestleMania match. That's a good choice, but you know what? It may not have the same context to a new fan if they don't know these guys' moves, because they're always kicking out of each other's finishers, and you know that was part of the drama of the match. When he would kick out of the chokeslam, he would kick out of the last ride, he would kick out of the tombstone, and Undertaker kicked out of the super kick. And if you take somebody who doesn't know these guys and they don't know their big moves, I don't know that it would necessarily mean as much to them if the context wasn't there. So I'm thinking a safer match, would be Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. That was such a great match. It was a brawl. It was a fight. It was blood involved, which I guess could be a turnoff to some people, but probably wouldn't be if you got, you know, like a young male fan watching wrestling for the first time. Probably will love it. It's just a great match, and there's nothing about that match that a non-wrestling fan wouldn't understand. It's two guys that hate each other's guts. They're in there. They're beating the crap out of each other. You know, the guy gets locked in a move. He's trying to fight out of it. Blood streaming down his face. The crowd's going crazy. He passes out. I mean, it's very, very easy to follow, straightforward stuff. I think Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, that ladder match from WrestleMania 10, would be another good choice. If somebody you think might find a wrestling match to be boring with the ladder, maybe that's a way to kind of reel them in, and they might find that interesting. And that was another great match. As far as a good WrestleMania show to get them started with, I would go with WrestleMania 21. That was the year they did the WrestleMania Goes Hollywood theme, which I loved. I thought that was great. You know, it had a really good Undertaker-Randy Orton match. It had the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match, which was all action. It had an excellent match with Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. And it had a good main event with Triple H and Batista. And if you think about it, every match offered something different, right? So Undertaker-Orton was a good match, but it was all about the streak, right? Orton trying to end the streak. The Money in the Bank ladder match was all action. The Shawn-Kurt Angle match was, as a straight wrestling match, was fantastic. I mean, there's a little bit there for everybody. And Triple H Batista, you know, was something that was built up over time. If you look at the promo packages building up to the match and Batista breaking away from Evolution, had a great story. So I would find it impossible for a person that you're hoping to convert into a new wrestling fan to watch that WrestleMania and not find something on that card that is not appealing to them. They also had a Piper's Pit segment on that show with Roddy Piper and Steve Austin. So overall, I thought WrestleMania 21 was a really good show. My first instinct was to say WrestleMania 17, which top to bottom is the greatest WrestleMania card of all time, but that's exactly why I would not recommend a new fan watch that first, because you're going to show them WrestleMania 17, which marked the end of the Attitude Era, and then you expect them to watch the product now. Can't do that. You can't do that to somebody. We can watch the product now because we're wrestling fans. We'll probably always be wrestling fans no matter how hard we bitch and moan about the bad stuff. You know, like I've been watching wrestling almost my whole life. A lot of you guys have been watching wrestling your whole lives, whether you're older than me, younger than me. But a new fan, you're going to show them a show like WrestleMania 17 and expect that, oh, wow, I love wrestling now, and put Monday Night Raw on a normal week, and they're going to watch that and go, wait a minute. What the hell happened? 21 was good enough. It had a little bit of everything. It's close enough to the current era to not be so radically different that a new fan might be turned off by the current product. But, you know, it won't blow them away to where everything else kind of pales by comparison. So I'd go at WrestleMania 21. This comes from Jeremy. With the WWE Network up and running, do you see WWE doing more network-exclusive events in the future, such as Madison Square Garden house shows, the return of UK-only pay-per-views, etc.? Probably more NXT specials. I would definitely do a few more of those this year. But if I were them, you know, you mentioned the MSG house shows. They just had one this weekend, actually. There was a Madison Square Garden house show last night. I would do live cut-ins to house shows here and there. Not every week. You don't have to do them every single week. But cut into the live action wherever they happen to be that night. Maybe shoot a promo or two with guys backstage. Why not? I think that would be pretty unique. If you've got a Renee Young or you've got a Tom Phillips or, you know, whoever, you have an announcer there that night who can be you know, he could do the on-camera stuff and say, we're live on location, you know, from Madison Square Garden here in New York City. There's live WWE action going on behind me right now, and we're going to cut in and show you a little bit of it. Kind of like what they do now, where when one show goes off the air, they have these videos, like these vignettes that they'll show to kill time before the next show goes on the air. Why not use that time, if they're live on location somewhere having a house show that night, to cut in for 2-3 minutes and show some of the action? You know, I think that would actually be a very cool thing. I think it'd be pretty unique. Terry from Seaham, England. Is it Seaham or Seaham? I'll say Seaham. Since the network has launched, I've started to wonder whether it would make it more likely, for a pay-per-view to take place in the UK, with WWE getting its money from the network, making them less reliant on people buying the pay-per-views from cable companies. Do you think it's more likely to happen now than ever before, as people, if they can't watch it at the time it happens, can now watch it on demand? Or is it still unlikely to happen due to time differences and all of the other reasons? I don't think it changes anything as far as WrestleMania goes, if that's what you're asking, but I do think it might make them more open to the idea of running a pay-per-view in the UK, like a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series. You know, it just boils down to whether the extra expense of running overseas is worth it to them. Can't hurt to try it one time and see how it goes, you know. You could do a hard sell on the network, promoting it in advance, and just see how things go. If they lose money on it, then they don't have to do it again. Brian from Wisconsin, who is your favorite WWE performer on the active roster at the moment, not counting NXT? Favorite wrestler? It's not favorite wrestler. It's favorite wrestlers. Has to be The Shield, without a doubt. I love all their matches. I mean, their promos, their presentation, everything about them. I love it. Best, like I said earlier, I sound like a broken record, best trio in history, one of the best factions in wrestling history. So The Shield. The Shield would be my favorite. Brock would probably be behind them if I had to pick just one guy, because again, Brock is also a very unique performer. He's not around so much where he still feels special. When he shows up, you know shit's about to go down. I mean, shit, you never know. Brock may show up one week and he'll be hitting fans in the head with TV monitors. That's pretty badass. And I gotta say, if that were me, if I were one of those people who got hit in the head by a monitor, I would wear it like a badge of friggin' honor. I'd be like, you know, I mean, I think that'd be awesome to be able to tell people, hey, Brock Lesnar hit me in the head with a friggin' TV monitor. So Brock's a special performer. He's fun to watch because he's so different than everybody else on the roster. And he's still very good. He's not just a guy who shows up to collect a paycheck and he just kind of bums it out there. Like, he goes out there, he'll fly around for you. You know, if he's in there with a big guy, I expect that's what we're going to see at WrestleMania. WrestleMania 30 is going to be the Brock Lesnar show in there with The Undertaker. Because I don't see The Undertaker taking too many bumps, like crazy bumps. Brock's going to have to really make him look like $1 million. He's probably going to fly around for all of Undertaker's offense. So he's still very good and very agile for a guy, even though he's a lot older than he was when he first came in many years ago. So if I had to pick one guy, I'd pick Brock, but my favorites would be The Shield. Adam from Michigan, I was listening to a sound off from 2012, and you were saying how you felt Wade Barrett is going to be a future world champion. Given where we are today, have your feelings about Wade Barrett changed, or do you have some bad news for me? I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you, Adam. I just don't see it. They don't know what to do with the guy. And also, when I think I made that comment, we also had 2 world titles. Now we only have 1, which I think is much better. But for a guy like Wade Barrett, it's probably bad news. So Barrett, I think, would be a very capable world champion. I don't see it, especially with 1 title now. I just don't see it happening. Nissim Levy, I heard rumors that Hulk Hogan was going to be inducted for the 2nd time into the WWE Hall of Fame, so I wondered if it could be part of his deal. Maybe he couldn't bear the thought of Ric Flair having 2 rings and not him. 2-time Hall of Famer is the dumbest thing ever. You have 1 career, so you should get 1 induction. I agree with you. It's dumb to put people in twice, especially when you have so many people who aren't in once, who probably deserve some recognition. But they are doing it, so I have no problem with Hogan being in there more than once. If they're inducting people twice, Hogan's got to be one of those guys. Because Hogan's Hogan, whether you like the guy or not. You know, for all he did for that company, he probably should be in there a few times, to be honest with you. And if they ever put the NWO in, the NWO maybe does not work if Hulk Hogan is not part of it. who's to say that if it's just Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, and they weren't able to sign Bret Hart, which was, I think, the original plan, is that they wanted to get Bret Hart to come over, and he would be the third guy, but Bret didn't come. So if it's just Hall and Nash as the invading guys, and there's no other big star, I guess they could have put Sting. I don't think a Sting heel turn in 96 would have worked nearly as well as Hogan's did. People didn't want to boo Sting. People still don't want to boo Sting. That's why when he turned heel in TNA, it didn't last very long, because people don't want to boo the guy. Hogan was already getting booed. People were begging. They were so tired of the guy that when he finally went heel, it was like, finally, now we can boo the guy because we're so sick of him. And Hogan was a much bigger star than Sting. Sting was in, how many years Sting was in WCW and their pay-per-views did nothing. Hogan came over, and say what you want to, but there was a noticeable uptick in pay-per-view business in WCW. That's the whole reason why they brought him in the first place. Even though we got a whole bunch of crappy main events, we got Hogan against his buddies, Hogan against the Shark, right? Former Earthquake, Hogan against Brutus Beefcake in one of his 59 different incarnations, the Butcher, Zodiac, the Booty Man, the Boogeyman, the Disciple, the Idiot, I mean, whatever character the guy was portraying. Point is, if they're putting people in more than once, I have no problem with Hogan being one of those people. If Flair goes in twice, Hogan should be in twice too. Alex from Vancouver, British Columbia. My buddies and I were watching some old pay-per-views on the WWE Network and laughed our asses off seeing the disaster of the 1994 Royal Rumble casket match and the 1995 Halloween Havoc pay-per-view that had Hogan in a monster truck sumo battle against the Giant, where he murders the Giant, or so we thought, and then ends up in the evening getting attacked by a mummy. My question is, what are some of the dumbest pay-per-view moments we should watch on the network for a good laugh? Well, how can I not say the gobbledygooker hatching from a giant egg at the Survivor Series in 1990? That would be one. That's always good for a laugh. There's WCW Capital Combat, which I actually watched the other day, the main event on that. Well, actually, it was before the main event. It was earlier in the show, but I watched the main event. But on that show, which was also in 1990, so boy, so much for drug testing that year. That was the show where RoboCop came to Sting's rescue. They were promoting RoboCop 2, and as part of the cross-promotion, they had somebody, it wasn't Peter Weller, but whoever it was, come out in the actual RoboCop costume. It actually looked pretty cool. I always thought the RoboCop outfit was pretty cool, which is one of the reasons why I hated that they did this reboot this year, and they completely reimagined what RoboCop looks like. But what was dumb about the whole thing is, he comes out, and the Horsemen are out there. This is when Sid Vicious was part of the Horsemen, and for whatever reason, I don't even know, Sid was wearing a tuxedo on this show. I have no idea why, but there's Sid, there's Arn Anderson, there's Ole Anderson, and here comes RoboCop walking at about a mile a minute, and they're afraid of him, and they back off from RoboCop, and they run off into the crowd. So the Horsemen, right, the dreaded Four Horsemen, were booked to be afraid of a fictional movie character, a cyborg cop on this show, who comes to rescue Sting, who was locked in a shark cage. The Horseman had just locked him in this little cage. And RoboCop comes over, and his big spot was that he was going to bend the bars to free Sting. The problem is, they were trying to pretend that the door was locked, but the door was very clearly not locked and actually came open, but they had to pretend like it was locked, and then he ripped the door off its hinges. The whole thing was a colossal clusterfuck. It was so stupid. It made about as much sense as WCW bringing in Chucky the Doll from the Child's Play movies to do promotion for one of the sequels. This was many years later on Nitro. I think Rick Steiner, I don't know if it was on Nitro or Thunder, but Rick Steiner was out there, I think, being interviewed by Mean Gene. And there's Chucky up on the jumbo screen, and he's interacting with Rick Steiner. Just complete nonsense. I mean, WWE has done some really dumb shit with celebrities, but I don't ever remember them bringing in a person in their celebrity character and having their guys, you know, back off in fear and terror. So, you know, that was pretty incredible stuff. If you've never seen it, Capital Combat 90 is the show. You can go watch that if you dare. I think your friends will enjoy that one. There's The Kennel from Hell, Unforgiven 99. So good they only did the match once with Al Snow and the Big Boss Man. And then there's the hardcore evening gown match between Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe at the King of the Ring in 2000, which is more horrifying than funny, I guess. You could also wait a few weeks if you want to for the Elimination Chamber to go up on the network and you can watch the AJ Lee Cameron match. That's also good for a laugh. Ziming Wong from Malaysia. I watch both WWE and TNA. I have no favorites. I just love wrestling. But you have you ever noticed if, let's say, WWE creates a gimmick based on pop culture, like the Wyatt family, Xavier Woods, and Alexander Rusev, it gets positive reviews. But if TNA does it, like Joker, Sting, Aces and Eights, and Main Event Mafia, they immediately get negative reviews. Why is that, and how do you think they can improve it? Well, I can only speak for myself. I was never a big fan of Xavier Woods' Power Rangers gimmick in NXT. And that's probably why he doesn't have it on the main roster right now. I see plenty of negative feedback from fans on the Rusev character because they think it's too cliche. It's like a throwback to the 80s when they did all those evil Russian characters as a play off the Cold War and all that. The Wyatts are great, but I liked Joker Sting when he first started doing the gimmick. I thought he was doing some of the best work of his career. I loved it. Go back and listen to the old sound-offs I did. I don't think I ever bashed Joker Sting. Maybe at the end, because it got played out. But when he was doing it, I loved it. Aces and Eights just flat out sucked. That's why it got negative reviews. They botched it from day one by having them lose so often. If you've got a heel faction that's going to run roughshod on your company, and this storyline is going to play out for over a year, like that one did, fucking 18 months that thing went on for, it would never fucking end. If you have a storyline like that, you have a heel faction like that, you don't have them lose so much right from the get-go that nobody takes them seriously. They were a joke right out of the gate. And it only got worse from there. The ball peen hammer bullshit, completely ridiculous. Not that Triple H hitting people with a sledgehammer is so much more realistic, but, I mean, that was pretty stupid too. But I was never a fan of that. So that storyline sucked. No two ways about it. You can defend it all you want to, but it sucked. It was no good. And the Main Event Mafia, I'm not sure what that has to do with pop culture. I don't think I ever was as harsh on them as I was Aces and Eights. But I think you'll always have people who bash TNA no matter what. No matter what they do. Because it's fun to pick on TNA. It's fun to pick on Dixie Carter. She makes it so easy. So these people do it even when TNA doesn't necessarily deserve it. That's just how it is. I try not to do that myself. If I bash or make fun of TNA, they fucking deserve it. And when things are good, I give them credit. Like the way they've been pushing Joe and Rude and Aries back into the main event picture. Great. They should have been doing that a long time ago. Better late than never. But you can bet your ass that if I say some shit about TNA that rubs people the wrong way, I'm not saying it just, you know, because it's funny or because, I want to be a bully to TNA. It's because they do a lot of stupid shit. Despite all the good stuff, they do a lot of stupid shit. And they deserve to be called out on it. But you're always going to have people who are going to pick on them and not give them a chance because they have a reputation and because they were bad for so long and because Dixie Carter makes it so easy to mock them. And you're always going to have people like that. You just have to tune them out and ignore them. Unless they actually watch the show, they don't have a right to form an opinion. I at least watch Impact. So when I talk about TNA, you know that when I talk about it, I've watched it. I'm not reading a report. I'm not going off secondhand accounts from Twitter about something stupid that happened on the show. I see it with my own eyes. And if it's stupid, I'll say that it's stupid. Abbas from New York City. One of my most favorite goosebump-inducing moments was when Eddie Guerrero beat Brock Lesnar for the championship. I went back and watched that match and noticed there were a lot more paparazzi-type people at ringside. They were at the ring taking pictures and things of that sort. First of all, were they placed there or were they actual photographers there taking photos? Why is that? Why are things like that not allowed to happen today? And why did they happen during that match? I'm not sure about that particular match. It's been a while since I've seen that No Way Out match. I actually don't remember there being many photographers at ringside at all. I'm not saying that there weren't. That's just not one of the things about that match I remember. A match like Shawn Michaels and Diesel from WrestleMania 11... that I remember. That whole ringside was filled with Japanese photographers and paparazzi because that was the show where Lawrence Taylor was wrestling Bam Bam Bigelow in the main event. And also because at the beginning of that match with Shawn and Diesel, this was back when Shawn was in his pissy phase, and when things didn't go his way, he would stomp his feet like a baby and he would bitch and moan. There was a spot where Diesel threw him across the ring and he did a flip bump in the corner, And there were so many people outside the ring, photographers, that Shawn landed on a guy. I think he landed on, like, a Japanese photographer. And the mature guy that he was, he immediately gets up, grabs the photographer, and very violently throws him to the side. So I remember stuff like that. But I would suggest that you go back and listen to the interview that I did on Sound Off 182. I did an interview with George Napolitano. And for those of you who didn't bother listening to the interview, or if you're a new fan and you haven't gone back and heard it, we talked for an hour. And I love stuff like that because George is going to go down in history as one of the most prolific wrestling journalists slash photographers probably in the history of the business. He'll be right up there with a guy like Bill Apter. And him and Apter were friends, and maybe they still are friends, but Bill Apter and George Napolitano were the two names you hear about a lot. Apter had his magazines, the Apter Mags, a lot of the time they would stay in character. And even now, I mean, Apter is featured on the WWE Network. They interviewed him for that WrestleMania Rewind special on the first WrestleMania. He's been doing articles on WWE.com. George had a whole series of wrestling magazines that he wrote for and edited and ran. At the same time, he also took pictures. And even when he got away from the magazines, like actually editing them and writing them, he's always been a wrestling photographer. So all of the key events in wrestling history, all the big WrestleManias, Survivor Series in Montreal, when that whole thing went down in the main event, if you look, he's right there. He's ringside for all of these different moments. So I wanted to talk to him because I've had a chance to become friendly with him in recent years, with non-wrestling related stuff. And then we started talking wrestling all the time. So I did the interview with him, and one of the things I asked him about, and he talked about, was why the photographers, you don't see them anymore at ringside at the WWE shows. And it's been a while since I've heard the interview, but I think the reason, or one of the reasons he mentioned for it, has to do with the changeover in 2008 to HD. And WWE has a very tight grip on their TV presentation now. Everything. I mean, everything is choreographed. Even the wrestlers, like, they know when they make a cover, if they're going for the three count, and they teach them this in NXT, they have to be positioned in a certain way. And sometimes you'll see a guy who goes down for a pin, and then he realizes, oh shit, I'm facing the wrong way, I need to be facing the hard camera, and he'll switch his body over to the other side. I mean, everything, every little thing is planned out. And they just did not want photographers, especially people who didn't work for the company, you know, littered all over ringside, ruining their shots. So what they did was they have a pit area that's set up off camera by the hard cameras, and they basically just stick everybody in the area over there. And that's how they do things. So they still have photographers and people who come to shoot pictures, but they're in a pit area that you can't see. And I kind of miss that because when you used to see the photographers at ringside, I don't know, it made it feel more special, I guess, to see these guys there doing their thing. I can understand where WWE is coming from, and I think George, when I asked him about that, said he actually likes it because as he gets older, it's always about getting in the right position for the right shot. So when you're at ringside with a bunch of other guys who are taking pictures for other magazines, you're competing with them. So he likes the fact that he doesn't have to compete with them anymore. He doesn't have to run around ringside. He can just stay stationary in one place, but he does miss it. You know, he does miss kind of being there in the middle of the action. And I think the matches lose a little bit not having those guys there. But that, if I remember correctly, I think that was the main reason he singled out for why things are done that way. It just has to do with the upgrade to HD and the upgrade to their television production. That's really what it boils down to. Josh from London, UK. Not sure if this has been asked before, but if you could pick a top 10 of your favorite music themes in WWE, what would they be? I don't like answering top 10 questions like this on the show. I get a lot of emails from people asking me, what's your top 10 this and your top 10 that? I try sometimes to get back to people directly, and sometimes I just don't have the time because I want to write like a really long response, but I just don't have the time for it. So I generally stay away from these questions, but I'll make an exception this one time with this question. You want my top 10 in terms of WWE music? In the spirit of Hulk Hogan being back in WWE, Real American is my all-time favorite. And I've said this before. I grew up on that theme. I hear it. That music, there's something about that song that just, it puts me in a good mood. So Real American is my favorite. No Chance in Hell, Stone Cold, K Kane, his original theme, Brock Lesnar, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, NWO, Demolition, and the fabulous Rougeau Brothers. In no particular order. Now you know.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, 18 years ago this week, on March 5th, 1996, WWE made the announcement that Kevin Nash, Big Daddy Cool Diesel, would be leaving for WCW. I still remember reading that statement they put up on their old America Online site. It used to be AOL keyword WWF, back when AOL was still relevant. This would be a major defection for WWE, as we would find out much later on. 13 years ago this week, on March 5th, 2001, ECW owner Paul Heyman made his debut as a color commentator on Raw is War in our nation's capital, replacing Jerry the King Lawler, who quit the company after the company released his wife, Miss Kitty, Stacy Carter, who would go on to reward the King's loyalty later that year by leaving him. There were still ECW wrestlers who held out hope that the company was still alive, it was going to pull through. They didn't know what was going on, and then all of a sudden, bam, they put on Raw, and there's Heyman sitting there. So imagine their surprise, especially the ones who still weren't paid. A month later, ECW officially declared bankruptcy. Also on this episode of Raw was the infamous segment where Vince McMahon forced Trish Stratus to strip down to her underwear and bark like a dog. And Heyman had the great line of, "Hey, Mom, I came to Washington, D.C., and I'm going to get to see Bush." 11 years ago this week, on March 3rd, 2003, Monday Night Raw emanated live from the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, New York. This was the return to Raw of Stone Cold Steve Austin, his first appearance on Raw after walking out on the company and returning to WWE at the No Way Out pay-per-view against Eric Bischoff. There was a face-off at the end of the show between Stone Cold and Hollywood Rock. He almost hit him with the stunner, but Rock slipped away. I was at the show. Probably the last time I'll ever see Rock and Austin face off on Raw, or anywhere, for that matter. And this was a memorable night for me because I was near death. I had a fever of 103. I had no business being at the building that night. But I already bought my ticket, and I was bound and determined to go. And so off I went in the freezing cold. I walked to that building. I want you to know, the Nassau Coliseum is right next to the place where I went to college. They're right next to each other. So, you know, I just walked down the turnpike to get there. But, you know, damn it, I did get there. I did make it. And may not have been the brightest move I ever made because I ended up in the hospital at 4 a.m. that night and missed an entire week of classes. I was so sick. But I do remember that night. 9 years ago this week, on March 8th, 2005, JBL blew up John Cena's United States Championship spinner belt at a SmackDown taping. He awarded the old version of the U.S. title to the new champion, his chief of staff, Orlando Jordan. In response, Cena actually showed emotion, anger, coming out with a pipe and demanding a match with JBL. SmackDown GM Teddy Long instead offered him a rematch with Orlando Jordan. Cena did not take very kindly to that. And he laid out Long with the FU, as it was called back then. 5 years ago this week, on March 3rd, 2009, in an interview with the UK Mirror, Mr. T, who headlined the first WrestleMania with Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, and Paul Orndorff, and actually fought Piper in a boxing match at the second WrestleMania, he admitted that he rejected an offer from WWE to be inducted into their Hall of Fame. And the reason for his rejection of said Hall of Fame invite? Pete Rose. Mr. T said, "WWE asked me to be in the Hall of Fame and I turned it down. You know why? They put Pete Rose in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. This guy can't even get into his own Hall of Fame. After they put Rose in, they came and asked me and I said, 'You don't insult me. You don't put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame before me. I ain't going to be part of that.' They put him in and he only did one WrestleMania and he didn't even wrestle." For the record, Pete Rose appeared in three different WrestleManias, and was far more entertaining than Mr. T was in either of his appearances. I bring this up because there have been rumors that Mr. T may have already accepted an invitation to be in the WWE Hall of Fame class this year in New Orleans, because they want to induct the entire WrestleMania 1 main event. They're going to induct matches now into the Hall of Fame. And so they would induct all four guys, at least Mr. T, if not all four guys, in New Orleans. you know, we'll see if it happens. If it does, I guess that means that Mr. T had a change of heart from 2009. You know, 5 years is a long time. And, you know, he actually made a lot of wrestling appearances in his day, too. It wasn't just the first two WrestleManias. You know, he did the match and the angle that led to the first WrestleMania, which I talked about recently. The war to settle the score on MTV, he was there for that. He had a boxing match with Randy Orton's father, Cowboy Bob Orton, on Saturday night's main event. He was brought in to be WWE special enforcer for a time in 1987 before he and the company finally split. I'm guessing it must have been early 87 because he wasn't at WrestleMania 3. I would think he would have been there if he was still working with the company. He refereed a Hulk Hogan-Ric Flair match in WCW in 1994. I would guess Hogan got him to come in. He even had a match that year with Kevin Sullivan on a WCW pay-per-view. So it's not like Mr. T did one shot and was never seen or heard from again, like a Drew Carey or something like that. You know, Mr. T being a part of that first WrestleMania probably saved the entire company. And that's not much of an exaggeration. I know they didn't play that angle up on their WrestleMania Rewind special on the network. I know their revision is history. It's hard to believe they wouldn't tell the whole truth. But the fact is, that's how important Mr. T was to that first show. And probably Cyndi Lauper deserves a lot of credit as well. Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper both had a lot to do with that, but probably Mr. T more than anything else. But definitely without him, they don't get the media exposure that they got. They don't get him and Hulk Hogan on Saturday Night Live. They don't get him and Hulk Hogan on the CBS Morning News and all the other appearances that they did together. And that show, that first Mania, is not the success that it turned out to be without Mr. T. If ever there was a celebrity who deserved to be in their Hall of Fame, he's the guy. And finally, 1 year ago this week, on March 5th, 2013, Paul Bearer, or Percy Pringle, whatever you want to call him, because he did have a career in wrestling long before Paul Bearer, passed away, died at the age of 58 in Mobile, Alabama. I think he had been treated for a blood clot. I still don't know exactly what it was, the cause of death, if it was a blood clot or if it was a respiratory thing, but he died, and it was pretty unexpected when he did die. And he's going into the Hall of Fame this year. I said earlier, very well deserved. I would have liked to have seen them include footage maybe in his Hall of Fame video of some of the stuff he did pre-WWE, which, especially in World Class and stuff, they own that footage. It's not like they don't have it. Maybe they will, at the actual Hall of Fame ceremony, acknowledge his career before WWE, but I guess he's going in as Paul Bearer, so probably no mentions of the Pringle dynasty or anything like that, and him managing Rick Rude and a bunch of other people. But he certainly is a deserving Hall of Fame candidate, even if you just look at the Paul Bearer portion of his career. One of the best managers, one of the most recognizable, certainly, faces in company history. And him and The Undertaker together were a good combination. They were a good team as a package. The whole Paul Bearer Undertaker thing just worked. I don't know that The Undertaker would have worked as well with anybody else. They started him out with Brother Love. Not sure why. I don't think long term that would have worked out too well. And Undertaker by himself, he probably would have been successful. I'm not going to say the only reason he became so successful was because of Paul Bearer, but Paul Bearer was an important part of the presentation, and that's what made it so great. And then they did the turn in 96, and Paul Bearer had Mankind, right? He was Uncle Paul. He had Vader. He had his own little mini stable of talent, and I always found Paul Bearer just immensely entertaining, especially during the Attitude Era as the, you know, the fat guy heel that you'd love to just make fun of because he had the high squeaky voice and he was always he was always afraid of his own shadow. And I've played the audio on the Sound Off before. One of my favorite all-time segments in Raw history was, and it was a comedy segment, it was a backstage skit, I guess you can call it, where they went to commercial break, kept the camera rolling. So, you know, in theory, these guys didn't know that they were being recorded. They were waiting to come back from break, but we can still see them. We can see Lawler and Paul Bearer sitting down. And Paul Bearer had been promising to reveal this horrible secret about The Undertaker. And Jerry Lawler's like, hey, you know, before we go back on the air, why don't you tell me, like, what's the big surprise? What's the big story? You can tell me. I won't tell anybody. And he went. He told this whole story about back in the day at the funeral home, you know, Undertaker's mama was looking at me and she took me right there in the kitchen on the table. And, you know, we heard the little pitter-patter of feet and it was little Undertaker coming down the steps. And, you know, thank God we heard him, because if he had taken one more step, he would have seen his mama's feet. One of them was in New York and the other one was in L.A. And then he did that cackle and, you know, he was so great. He was just so much fun to watch. And to his dying day, he was still managing guys in wrestling. He was managing a guy by the name of Sean Ricker on the independent scene for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Sean Ricker now is in WWE developmental as Slate Randall. I don't know when we're going to see him debut. We haven't heard much, but he's a guy I've said before to watch out for, because he's got the look. He's kind of like Magnus in a lot of ways, in that I don't know as a wrestler how good he really is. I haven't seen a lot of his, you know, indie matches, so I can't really comment on that. But just based on what I've heard from the guy and on, like, promos, and he was part of that whole rock reality show on TNT, The Hero, that guy could be a big star down the road. And I wonder, I would imagine that Paul Bearer probably saw something in him, because he took him under his wing and he was managing him for a while. And, you know, right up until his last day on Earth, he was still involved in the wrestling business. So it'll be really cool to see him, to be there live, to see him inducted into the Hall of Fame. And 1 year ago this week, we lost one of the great managers in wrestling history. So that takes care of the segment for this week. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. Please send me your questions with your name and where you are from. You can follow us on Twitter, @Solemnmonster is the handle. I'll be live tweeting during Raw this week on the road to WrestleMania. We're getting close to 5,000 followers. We're still a little less than 200 followers away. I'm hoping that, my goal is that by WrestleMania, we can get to 5,000 followers on Twitter. So if you're not following, please do tell other people too. We're well on our way to that. We're all over Facebook as well. We have a profile page, a fan page, and a group. And the group is where a lot of the action has been of late. You have to apply for membership. It's a closed discussion group. But we have picked up a ton of new people. We have well over 1,500 members now, all talking pro wrestling. And what I've done also, for those of you who don't know, traditionally we have a thread on my Facebook profile page for Raw every week. From now on, that thread will be in the group. I will sticky it, and you guys can talk about Raw during the show. We'll probably do the same thing with pay-per-views. So you'll want to get in on the group for that. You can apply for membership, and I will approve you. Subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. We have a couple of new Sound Off extras up, including my interview with Matthew, the Botchamania guy, which was a lot of fun to talk to him. So you can subscribe on there. Stream the show in Stitcher Radio and help us out. It'll bump up our rankings every time somebody listens to us in Stitcher. And you can leave a review for the Sound Off on there or in iTunes. And there's a lot of different ways you can support the show. You can always make a PayPal donation on thesolemnmonster.com. Like I said, $10 or more, and I'll get you a wrestling nickname here on the show. But you can also buy something in the Sound Off Superstore. We still got the Sound Off 316 shirt up there, which I know a lot of you bought. And by the way, if you did, take a picture wearing it, and I'll post it on Twitter. So you can support the show that way, and you can always support us by going to audibletrial.com/solemnmonster and signing up for a free trial there. All of those are different ways to help the show and keep spreading the word, because the only way people are going to learn more about the Sound Off is by hearing from you guys. You guys recommend us. You guys, you know, retweet us and share things on Facebook. And, you know, when I post a link to this episode on Twitter, go ahead and retweet that, and other people will listen to it and hopefully will like what they hear. So for those of you already doing that, I thank you. Hopefully the show will continue to grow more and more as people do spread the word. So until next weekend, we'll be back then with episode 318. It looks right now, if I check my calendar, it looks like it will be Sound Off 321. That'll be the weekend right before WrestleMania. I'll be in New Orleans with the gang. We'll probably do another roundtable. We try to do one of these every year when we go to WrestleMania. We did one last summer when we were in Philadelphia for Money in the Bank. The plan right now is to do another roundtable in New Orleans for WrestleMania. Myself, Noah, Mark, and Brian Blade, and do predictions and all that good stuff. And it looks like if we, you know, we're on target for Sound Off 321, but don't hold me to that. But there is some fun stuff coming up with WrestleMania right around the corner, so that's something to look forward to. So, until next time, be well, stay safe, thank you for your continued support of the Sound Off, and we will be right back here with another episode next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Sala Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima.
The bad.
And I am back to headline WrestleMania, so deal with it.
And the ugly.
Then they have a hat. The hat itself is actually nice. It looks like a nice hat. What's wrong with this is it's a beard baseball hat. The entire brim of the hat is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
Well, mostly the good.
You can't disregard the fans. You can't disrespect the talent. I think we all want to see a change.
Sala Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on the SalaMonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Sala Monster Sound Off.